informative, and engaging. Rick Munn. Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh, my goodness me. Thursday, the 29th of September, the year of our Lord, Anno Domini, 2022. Maybe this is it, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe this is it. I don't know. A lot of people are starting to get sobered up. A lot of people are sobering up. And I don't mean from a night out on the tour, on the old amber neck charmer, as the Australians call it, Foster's Lager. Paul Hogan used to say, I was down the pub and I had a few jars of the amber neck charmer. No, I'm not talking about recovering from a hangover here. I'm talking about harsh reality hitting home. Or you can adopt the ostrich approach, which, you know, has its benefits. Stick your head in the sand and just hope everything goes away. I was out for a walk today. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful morning. For a change, the sun was shining here in Northern Ireland. The wind was blowing. It's autumn, my favorite season. Just for a split second, I forgot about everything and it was good, you know, and then I remembered I'm going home to talk to people about stuff, bad stuff, but it needs to be talked about because we need to make people aware of what's happening, that hopefully they can prepare accordingly. Things keep stepping up a gear on the show today. Let me consult the Black Book of Doom. If I looked at the right week, it would be helpful. I don't want to tell you who's on next week. Today, we have Mr. Dan Tubb. Yes, increasingly, how would I say, perturbed Mr. Dan Tubb. I've watched this guy over this year go from a super cool, mellow dude to a concerned gentleman, a man who's asking more questions, and a man who's speaking out with ever more boldness about what's going on. And that's a compliment, by the way, Dan. I'm complimenting you here. Greg Mabry will be joining me in the second hour from Western Australia, isolated away, as far away from the world as humanly possible in Perth. And then Rob Hutchinson will be joining me from South Africa. So we got a kind of global thing going on. We've got UK, we've got Australia, we've got South Africa. UK, Liz Truss defends the mini budget. That's got to be the worst definition of anything that's ever happened, to call what happened last week a mini budget. It was maximum destruction. It wasn't a mini budget. That's like saying I'm a little bit overweight. I'm a fat kid. I need to lose a lot of weight. Right, it's like saying, Rick, you're just a little bit overweight. No, I need to get my fat ass out, train more, and eat less garbage. Let's call it what it is here. That was not a mini budget. The Financial Times is reporting that the UK economy's latest news, Truss defends her mini budget, but admits elements of controversy. That's like being caught robbing a jeweler's shop, you know, with a handful of Rolex watches and saying, yeah, okay, I have some stolen goods in my hand. Of course, there's elements of controversy. The whole damn thing was controversial. She says on Sky News, we have done the right thing. Right thing for who? There's no doubt she's done the right thing for certain people. Maybe bankers and her friends in the city who have been shorting the pound. Oh, yeah, she did the right thing for those guys and girls. But she didn't do the right thing for me. Liz is accused of inept madness. That's putting it mildly. Inept madness in Tory backlash to market turmoil. And of course, she defends Kwasi Kwarteng. Kwasi is being defended by Liz. You know, how long have these gangsters been in power now in Sitchi? What, 3 weeks? Imagine they get a run at this. There won't be anything left by Christmas. Nothing. Liz Truss is a danger to the economy and has lost control, says Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer's starting to look good. That's how bad the Tories are right now. They're actually making Starmer look good, and he is the pits. Quartang splurge meets unintended consequences. No, no, no. The consequences were not unintended. This is controlled demolition of an economy, in my humble opinion. We're going to dig into the money side of things a little bit more in a minute, just to keep you lovely folk aware that for now, while we still have internet connectivity, Putin hasn't bombed the undersea transatlantic internet connections and put us all off her yet. But I'm sure his finger's over the button. I'm sure his finger's over the button. Hang on a minute. What have I got here? I've got a stalker in TNT. I'm not going to say who it is, Mike. So I want to say hello. I've been asked to say hello to Gail Tuffield from Elphington. Gail Tuffield from Elphington. I have no idea who you are, but I've been told to say hello, and I want to say hello. If you're tuning into the show, you're more than welcome. We appreciate every listener. I think I have like 3 listeners on any given time, so you're one of them. So it's nice to know who's out there listening to me. So Gail, big salute to you in Elphington. And a big salute to Mike Grant as well, who's probably sitting in the bath, floating in a bath full of bubbles with a big scotch and a cigar, because that's what he does. That's the benefits of being a station manager for a massive multinational radio station like TNT. Big kiss to you, Mike. Mwah! And one to you too, Gil. Mwah! Anyway, enough of my strange behavior. TNT Radio is available everywhere. I mean, like literally everywhere. It's all. We're on Getter, we're on Gab, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. We stream live on Rumble and BitChute and all these platforms and Odyssey. And of course, on our radio app, which is available on the Google Play Store and on the App Store. Yeah, on the App Store. So anyway, if you don't have it, download it and stay connected to us at all times on TNT Radio.
Calling out the bigwigs.
The government works for us, not the other way around.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Dan, the man, Tub. What a time to be alive. What a time to be a finance guy or girl, eh? What do you think? I'm surprised you're not spinning around in that AKR racing seat of yours. What's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, I mean, we live in interesting times, don't we? I mean, it's been about a week since we last talked, and I could say, you know, let's talk about what's blown up since then. But the thing is, so many things have blown up. You're probably not going to know what I'm talking about. Is it the pound? Is it Nord Stream? Is it US credibility? You know, what is it that's blown up? There is so much that is falling down at the moment. And this all comes back to my thesis, the thing that I've been talking about. We are at the end of a 40-year debt cycle. You know, 40 years of bad decision making because money has been too cheap, because it has been too easy for government and big corporations to borrow. And when you get debt levels up to this point, you get such an accumulation of bad decisions, such an accumulation of misintended, you know, downstream consequences. That it doesn't take much to push things over. You know, we're seeing what's happened in the pound, and I think a lot of the media is commenting, you know, focusing on the tax breaks that Truss rolled out, and they're pushing back against it. And as much as I hate to come to the defence to the government in any way, they do have a point. You know, tax cuts by themselves should not be something that tips over your currency. The problem is that was the feather that broke the camel's back. That was the latest on a long string of things that have continually pushed the debt up, and that's why we've got where we are. So, you know, things falling all over the place, Rick.
Let me say this, you know, because maybe I'm sure you do the same thing. As you're out walking around, you think about things, you analyze things, you try and make sense of things, okay? So, as you know, I worked in financial services for 10, 11 years myself, you know, dealt with money, dealt with investments, dealt with offshore stuff, inheritance tax planning, mitigations, all the whole shebang. And there was always sets of rules and guidelines that you would follow, you know, working out risk profiles, diversification of portfolios, and so on and so forth. Okay. Cyclical markets, housing markets, bond markets, currency markets, fluctuations up and down and in and out, and time invested and all that. At the minute, things are in so much turmoil. It's almost like the rule book, for want of a better expression, has been ripped up and thrown out the window. Okay. So if you or I were to give someone sound financial advice now based on the accepted norms of sound financial advice, it may not be actually the best thing to do because everything's crazy. Like you said, cutting tax the way it was done at any other time may not necessarily have been a bad thing. But when the mini budget or the mini tactical nuclear financial strike was launched last week, it has caused absolute mayhem, okay? Even to the point that the IMF, the International Money Fund, are effectively lobbying for Kwarteng to wind his neck in, to rein it in, to undo some of the stuff that he's proposed. And this isn't even a week. This was, what, last Thursday or Friday? This is what day is it today? Is this Thursday? A week? I've lost all track of time. But within a week, the IMF telling the Chancellor of the Exchequer of the UK to reverse, the Bank of England talking about the gilt business that they're doing, the way the pound has tanked. Literally yesterday, I watched it live on stream with a guy. It went down 3% in my third hour of the show with Fabio Vici. I was watching it live, 3% in an hour. Mate, this is definitely uncharted territory, at least certainly in our lifetimes. And, you know, I think we need to be... There needs to be unprecedented responses because the traditional responses just aren't going to work. We need to get rid of these people in power. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the volatility. A 3% move in a day, let alone an hour, that's more volatile than the Nasdaq. This sort of thing should not be happening in the markets. Is it worth going into what actually happened yesterday? You know, what actually sort of triggered that blow up? I mean, that could be something to cover.
Yes, you know, essentially, if you want to do that, we can do that now. Yeah, we've got it. If you can do it in like 4 minutes, we'll squeeze it into four minutes, and it'll take us up to the ad break. Let's cover it. What did happen yesterday? What was the big deal?
I'll give the short version. So, look, UK financial institutions are mandated to hold government debt because the thinking is that government debt is riskless. You know, I have sat in financial exams where, you know, the correct answer to a question has been, you know, yes, government gilts are without risk. They are riskless. So these firms have been mandated to hold them. And they've got all of these gilts that don't yield much. So what they wanted to do is they've wanted to try and get a little bit of return on this stuff that they're forced to hold. So they entered it onto swap agreements with other financial institutions to try and squeeze out a little bit of return. And when the pound started falling, And the yields on these things started rising, so the value of the bonds were falling. All of a sudden, they found that those swap agreements were now requiring something called a margin call. So they need to put up more money in order to meet their obligation on these things. Now, normally that's not a problem because, you know, you just reduce your position size or you sell some collateral, you will do something. But because of this accumulated problem, this 40 years of debt dysfunction, what's happening at the dollar is there was literally no market to sell into. Nobody wanted to buy them. And so they were having to sort of offer them up at almost desperation prices, which again pushed them lower, which meant that more people got sucked into this. More pension firms got sucked into the position where they were now facing a margin call. And that sort of doom loop continued. So you then got into this ridiculous situation where the Bank of England has to come along and says, in order to stabilize the market, we're going to we're going to intervene to make a functional market. What they basically mean is they're just going to come along and buy everything that everyone wants to sell. You know, this is behavior that simply should not be happening. And essentially, you know, our bottom line, it the issue is there is too much debt out there. The whole reason governments do quantitative easing is because there are not enough people who actually want to buy all of this government debt. Everything then flows from that. That basically explains everything from 2008 onwards.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
It's, cri- it's crystallizing it. And literally what we're seeing unfolding this week, this has been a massively, massively volatile and massively important week in financial history within the UK and across the world. You know, it's not just the UK's affected by this. You know, as people that are being criticized for making decisions, you know, Liz Truss is pointing around the world saying, yeah, but it's happening in Italy and it's happening in America and it's happening here. And yes, I get that, but there are things that you can do to control it to a degree. And certainly the measures that Kwarteng put in place last week are the national insurance, slight national insurance reversal at Sunak. I could put in a 1% cut on the basic rate of income tax, the high rate 45% bracket scrap, bankers' bonuses uncapped, no VAT assistance for small businesses that are right on the wall and about to go out of business. Kamikaze budget that maybe in better times with different set of circumstances might have worked. Yes, I take that point, but these are unprecedented times. It was a kamikaze mission. Kwarteng needs a white headband with a rising sun on it with his little red briefcase as he goes and unleashes more financial hell onto the UK. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to look at the sad fact that we've become accustomed to very low interest rates for a very, very long time. And when they start to hike up again, boy, oh boy, is the shock going to be something else for people that have been accustomed to all-time lows. And also investors' compensation scheme. People think, you know, oh, I'm okay. The bank has said they'll cover me for 85K, possibly. Let's think about that one when we come back. Because there's a maybe in there after the break here, the ad break. Come on, Rick, get it together. Ad break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Don't go away.
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
People say, this is crazy. Why is Joe Biden doing this? It makes no sense. Well, first of all, Joe Biden's doing nothing. Joe Biden's lucky if he can make it to the podium. He's not running the country. The people running him are the ones running the country. His chief of staff, Valerie Jarrett, all of Obama's people, the senior executive service that Obama put in every single executive department. Joe Biden isn't running the country. And the people that are running the country, these are hardcore Marxists. In the words of John Kerry when he was running for president in 2004, America needs to be taken down a peg. This is their ethos. This is what they believe. It's all part of cultural Marxism. People ask, what's cultural Marxism? Well, Marxism is an economic philosophy where the people that control the means of production control the workers, and all the workers have is their labor to trade for money. And Marx was a revolutionary that advocated a proletariat overthrow of the capitalist system, implementing socialism. Well, cultural Marxism uses the same principles, but it applies it to things like religion and society and education.
Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
All right, Don. By the way, I should have said this. You'd think after, what, 8 months, I would know this by now. Don Tubb, a.k.a. on Twitter, at KingBingo_, is a former venture capitalist, so he knows his onions. Focused on emerging technologies and digital trends, he now is a Bitcoin miner and a podcaster. And we have talked about these things together now. And I'm very fortunate to have done so for about, what, 6-7 months now. Dan's been coming on periodically and we've been tracking developments and forecasting things. And yeah, it looks like it's going according to forecast up until this point in time. And sadly, we're revising, you know, because as a financial advisor, sometimes you have to revise your forecasts. And I'm afraid, my friend, if we were to sit down and revise our forecasts now, in the short to medium term, I don't think we'd be revising them for the better. In the short to medium term, I'm talking about.
Unfortunately, you know, everything that we talked about over those last few months has come true. And I've consistently said, you know, these are my predictions and I hope that I'm wrong about them.
Me too.
And unfortunately, I've not been proved wrong so far. You know, it is all played out. We talked about Sri Lanka before it happened. Then we talked about a lot of what's happening now before it happened. You know, perhaps in a minute, I'll give my predictions on what I think is going to happen next. And again, I hope I'm wrong. But unfortunately, my track record is good.
There's another guy I have on periodically called Fabio Vici. Fabio is a professor of critical theory down in Cardiff University. He's Italian. So he gives me the lowdown in Italy. Plus, we talk about, you know, bond markets and financial stuff, much like yourself. And we're the same. The only thing we called wrong is Draghi. We thought Draghi would remain in power in Italy until next March. Then he quit. Now Meloni's in. But Draghi aside, yeah, our track record's been pretty good at calling it. But let's hope we call everything wrong from this point, because we're going to be calling a lot of nasty stuff. And one thing in particular I'm seeing cropping up now, I'm sensing a feeling of increasing panic among people. I'm seeing more people asking, can I get my pension? Can I get it now? Do I have to wait? How do I do it? Am I covered in the bank? How much can I take out every day? What can I do? Where can I put it? People are starting to... they're starting to feel this crystallizing now, that it's not just internet hype and it's not just do merchants like me talking about it's all going to fall down. I think people are actually starting to feel it in their bones. They're starting to realize there's something serious going on. One thing I want to maybe debunk with you, because people ask me this all the time. Someone wrote to me this morning, is it true that I'm covered for up to £80,000 of investments in my bank account? Well, number one, the investor's compensation scheme, it's up to £85K, not 80, but it's not a guarantee. My bank this week, now maybe this is coincidence or maybe this is covering their own asses. My business bank wrote to me this week and said, dear Mr. Munn, just a reminder that you may be covered for up to £85,000 of deposits should things go pear-shaped with us. So there is a scheme in place, but it is not guaranteed. Okay, and I remember when I worked for a bank and people used to ask me this, my reply would be, listen, Dan, it's not guaranteed, but never in history, 300-400 years, has anyone ever needed to use it? Or has it been refused? Never, 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 never. So don't worry about it. It's not guaranteed, but I mean, it's as good as guaranteed. But again, my friend, these are unprecedented times. There could be a chance that you go down to have your 85K if you're fortunate enough and the bank says, sorry, we've bailed it in. We'll give you shares and are just about to go insolvent bank, Mr. Tubb, and there's absolutely F all you can do about it. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, it's very possible, actually. So in July of last year, the Bank of England published a document basically explaining how they would execute a bail-in. What a bail-in is, when the system runs out of money, basically they just take yours. So they will go to the bank accounts and they will help themselves, is what a bail-in is. It's something that we have seen before. I think it occurred in Cyprus back in 2008. Uh-huh. You know, they took, I forget the numbers now. It's something like they took everything over 300,000 euros out of the banking system for anyone who had that much in there. Now, you might think 300,000 euros is, you know, quite a lot. And you've got more than that in the bank, you know, very good. But, you know, a certain percentage of people, for example, were selling their house that week. And they would have lost an enormous sum of money. This is something which has been established because the Bank of England decided that it was something they needed to do here. Now, the other thing we should talk about, of course, is, I mentioned predictions. I think that basically what's happening at the moment across the Western world is politicians and central bankers are trying to cram together things that cannot go together. They're trying to do impossible things. So they're trying to keep inflation low, but they're also trying to inflate their debt away. And they're trying to have low taxes, and they're trying to have high levels of government spending. Mm-hmm. You just can't put all of those things together without breaking the markets. And that's what's happening. They're going to have to give up on some of this. And look, the scary thing is, I think people are actually going to choose the inflation option. So I put out a thread. You very kindly sort of mentioned my Twitter account a minute ago. So it's @KingBingo_. Silly name, I know. I picked it at random like 12 years ago, thinking that Twitter wasn't going to be a thing. So yeah, that's how I got it.
You can change that, by the way. I think you can change that.
Yeah, I can, but then I'd have to think of something better. And whenever I start thinking about it, I can't come up with something. So. Well, yeah, I suppose we could do my name. That seems a bit boring. But anyway, so I put out this thread basically explaining where we are in this situation with the debt that's being accumulated. And I laid out three options of what can happen from now. Option number one, it's the honest option. And that is what we do for the next, 10 to 15 years is we cut government to the bone, but we keep taxes high and we pay off the debt. Mm-hmm. That would mean basically getting rid of pensions, welfare, the NHS, or stuff like that, and spending every penny on paying down this debt. Right? Nobody is going to vote for option one.
No.
So option one is out the window. Second option, you just default on the debt. You say, sorry, we're not going to pay it. Tough luck. Seems reasonable. Get back at the bankers. Why not? Okay, here's why not. Because these bonds form the basis of our financial system. We used to have a monetary system that was based on gold. We now have a monetary system that is essentially based on government debt. That is, government debt is somebody else's collateral. Banks buy it, and that is their collateral, which they then go off and they do their activities. So if you wipe out the base layer of our new monetary system, which is sovereign debt, you've wiped out money. Now, because money is half of every transaction that takes place, you've just collapsed the financial system as a whole. And now farmers can't get paid, miners can't get paid, the entire economy shuts down. Option number three is you spend the next 10 years with really high inflation and you inflate the problem away. Now, that is obviously going to be the one that people choose because it's the least worst option, but it's still a really bad option and people are still going to get screwed. So even our best choice from here is a really bad one.
The best choice, guys and girls, is 10 years of absolute hell. That's your best option. Yeah. People aren't even going to make it to Christmas with that. Listen, but you know what? You're right. You're right. That's the best option. The best option is 10 years of hell. And that's the best option. Well, listen, let's take a break. Let's take inhale some oxygen, quaff a little bit of cold water here in my part, and let's come back and look at this in a little bit more depth after this very brief news break here on TNT Radio.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Military analysts have sounded the alarm over Washington's endless support for Ukraine, warning that it doesn't have a bottomless pit of weapons and munitions to give away. The United States is emerging as the most likely culprit behind the attack on Russia's Nord Stream pipelines, and Australia will start administering COVID booster shots to babies after the country's medical regulator granted approval to use Pfizer's booster shot on infants as young as 6 months.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
Okay, I am speaking, lamenting, weeping, wailing, and gnashing my teeth with Mr. Dantop this morning, also known as, I don't want to embarrass him here, but he did say it, at King Bingo underscore. We'll have to get you a new name. Listeners, actually, this is let's do a competition here. Rename Dan, rebrand Dantop. Send your suggestions in for what he should use as at.
That's a good idea.
Why not? Because believe it or not, people are listening. People are listening now, and somebody's actually sent me a message. So I'm going to throw this out. A certain Rob Hoyle has just sent me a message on Twitter. He said, Rick, I'm listening to the show. And this is just, obviously, we can't give financial advice per se, but we can mull over scenarios here, okay? So he said, Rick, I'm listening to the show. What do you think about gold? I've got 40K in a vault with a bullion dealer. Should I pull it out? So, hypothetical question there. Somebody's got 40 G's worth of gold with a bullion dealer. Should they pull it out? If so, what do they do? Stick the gold under the mattress, liquidize the gold into cash, put the cash under the mattress, put it into Bitcoin, buy rice. What would you do if that was you? If you had 40 G's of gold with a bullion dealer, Dan Tub, what would you be doing with it?
Yeah, basically yes to all of those. You know, the answer is, you know, I don't know how secure that bullion dealer is going to be. And I can't give financial advice, but I can tell you what I do. So yeah, I do like to have a bit of physical. In fact, I like to basically spread it around, because at this point, with things failing, you don't know which is the bit that's going to fail. So I've got a little bit of everything. There are things that I focus on more than other, but I do have a little bit of everything. So the first thing I've got is I've got about a month's worth of paper cash. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't like cash because it's being inflated away. But if we were to get into another 2008 type situation, which, you know, basically the UK almost did yesterday, it's not impossible that the ATMs will shut down. And then having paper cash is very handy because it gives you that sort of immediate option. Mm-hmm. So actually, I like a little bit of that. I very much like physical gold. I like the you can buy the sort of ounce coins, and I think they are free from capital. Are they free from capital gains tax? I know that the coins, they have certain tax advantages that the bars don't, and they're small. You can keep a certain number of those in your home. For larger amounts, like this gentleman, he's using a bullion for that extra security. And in a sort of true Armageddon situation, you know, I don't know how that reliable is. You know, I might be tempted to keep a little bit of it in sovereign coins in my own possession, and maybe keep the bulk of it with the bullion dealers if you feel they're a good option. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned Bitcoin. Look, basically, we are going to need a new monetary system because the one that we've got is failing. And there are a couple of options of what that could look like. There is something emerging, which is the BRICS currency. Brazil, Russia, China, India, South Africa. This new BRICS currency. That could be a new reserve currency. Nobody outside of those countries wants that, least of all the West. The West is going to try and bring in their central bank digital currencies, but the technology is not ready. And I bloody well hope that by the time the technology is ready, that people like us, Rick, would have made enough stink that it is politically unviable, because central bank digital currencies are basically digital slavery for the next 100 years. Okay, so that's another option.
Yep.
And then there are two good options, which is gold and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Gold has some difficulties because basically, you kind of need to keep it in one place. You need to centralize it. If you let everybody just keep their own gold, you get people, you know, drilling into the bars and putting tungsten rods in there. So you kind of need to keep an eye on it. But that basically forces you to centralize the gold in a handful of locations. And if we have a global gold-backed currency, you then have to trust everybody else to tell you how much gold they have without lying. So, you know, it is a much better system than we have now, but it will cause greater centralization. And centralization is the thing that has basically led us to these problems, because you cannot trust central banks. You cannot trust governments. And the final option is Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It's not ready yet, but it in theory, it's almost perfect money. If it can gain adoption And if it can gain that sort of user interface level, you know, think of it like the internet. Bitcoin at the moment is a bit like the internet in 1997. It's those modems that go whir and ping, and you need to type in a long series of numbers in order to sort of get things to work. And it's clunky as hell. 20 years later, using the internet, I mean, my grandma uses the internet. It's easy. You know, it's the user interface level has developed. If that same user interface level develops of Bitcoin, that actually could be global money. Now, because the risk return profile on Bitcoin is so asymmetric, basically all you need to do is put a very small amount of money into it. I always say to people, you know, what's a small amount of money for you? £100, £10? Put that in. And if it does what I think it might do, it will multiply up so much that a 1% allocation might well ensure your net worth. Mm-hmm. And those, I think, are probably going to be our best option. Have a little bit of everything, protect yourself in every way, and stay nimble. One more thing. I would also be cautious about, you know, thinking that the world is ending and selling down, you know, if you've got stocks and bonds and whatever, thinking that you need to sell them all. Because, you know, for all I know, tomorrow, central banks around the world, they pivot and say, we're going back to central quantitative easing. And then the values of stocks and bonds, they rocket up because, you know, we're back to the days of free money. So, yeah. You know, my advice is, well, I can't give advice, but what I would say to myself is,
yes.
You know, stay frosty, but stay diversified, you know, have a little bit of a number of things that can protect you, because, you know, things could blow up tomorrow, or we could be back to the days of the printing press in no time.
You see, the thing I like about your advice, or not your advice, what you would do, all right, let's not call it advice, okay, is the fact that you're a big advocate of Bitcoin. You see that as potentially being the way forward, but you're not one of these people that just bangs on and on every opportunity. Bitcoin solves this, Bitcoin solves this, Bitcoin solves this, Bitcoin solves this. It might solve it. Yes, it might, but it's not nailed down and it's not guaranteed, and we're nowhere near that point right now. However, what you've said is it should possibly form part of a balanced, diverse portfolio of options available to you. So if it's not going to solve everything, you have other options on the table. If it does solve anything and you've went all in on it, well, then you've made the best decision you've ever made. But if it doesn't solve everything and it falls apart and you've went all in on it, then you're shafted, royally shafted. So that's why I like your strategy. Diversification, a little bit of cash. Don't liquidize the stock portfolio unless maybe you've done fantastically well at it. It's under an ISA wrapper. You can liquidize it without any capital gains tax and maybe put it into, you know, something else, you know, options. You have a lot of options out there, a little bit of gold. That's another thing. People saying buy gold. If there's a meltdown, you can use your gold. I don't know if you've ever tried to take a gold bar into Sainsbury's or Tesco and say, listen, I want a loaf and a pint of milk and, you know, I've only got this and, you know, it doesn't look like you've any way of weighing it or valuing it, or what's your exchange rate and how you're going to give me change for it, given that it's worth $5,500 and I'm only spending $150 on my shopping. All right. So, yes, it's possible. And those little coins you talked about, very smart. I don't know if you know this or not. But American Special Forces troops are issued when they go behind lines with a certain belt, a utility-type belt. And on the inside of that belt, I think, I'm pretty sure they have 3 solid gold coins. Because no matter where they are in the world, no matter what denominations there, when you take a piece of gold out and you need to get from A to B and you cross that person's palm with it, they're going to take you where you want to go. So, of course, it's an option. But think about it also logically. Take all the money out of the bank and stick it under the mattress. That's not a smart move either, because if the mattress goes up in fire, you get robbed, then all your money's gone. You need a spread. You need diversity. And no one thing will be the sole answer going forward, because we just simply cannot make that call right now. We cannot make that call right now. But yes, our current fiat system is absolutely in its death throes. Something's going to have to replace it. But it's also worth noting that the banks are the globalists and the banks are absolutely not going to be supportive in any way of something like Bitcoin that gives you financial independence and anonymity and, you know, a cloak over your financial transactions. They're going to want to be all over that to regulate it, to outlaw it, possibly, and give their version of it. So all these things need to be taken into consideration. So, yeah. Rob, if you're still there and you haven't fallen off your chair, yes, he said, thanks, mate, great show. Yes, much appreciated. Thank you for your question. Hopefully that has shed a little bit of light on it. So, Rob, thank you for your query. Let's take another quick ad break here. And it's nice to do that. It's nice to know there's people asking questions and we're not giving definitive answers. We're giving suggestions that maybe people can go away and analyze and think them through for themselves and maybe adjust their own personal financial strategies, okay? Because that's what we're trying to do, trying to give options and you know, possibilities, alternates to what you're maybe doing at the minute. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes and we'll maybe look at the mortgage market in the UK. There's been a whole lot of turmoil in the mortgage market linked in with potential massive interest rate hikes. What could it mean for a homeowner? Should you be buying a property now? What if your mortgage is pulled? Should you be crying about that? Should you be jumping for joy maybe about that? We'll maybe touch on that when we come back after the ads here on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Remember how on stage with cameras rolling, Joe Biden bragged how he threatened Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko in March 2016 that the Obama administration would pull $1 billion in U.S. loan guarantees and send Ukraine into insolvency if it didn't immediately fire Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin, who was investigating Hunter Biden's crimes in Ukraine? I said, "You're not getting the billion," Biden began. "I'm going to be leaving here in, I think it was about 6 hours." I looked at them and I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bitch, he got fired, Biden bragged. Huh. Remember in February of this year at a press conference with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Biden said, "If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine. There will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. A reporter asked, "How do you plan to do that since the project is in Germany's control?" "We will, I promise you, we will be able to do it," Biden said, smirking. Well, son of a bitch. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Associated Press reported that tax findings for fiscal 2020 by the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation list millions of dollars paid to entities controlled by relatives and close associates of then-executive director and co-founder Patrice Cullors. The IRS filings, the first and only public disclosure of the Black Lives Matter Foundation's finances, show that the non-profit took $76,872,002 in fiscal 2020, mainly in donations from corporate backers and individuals, and paid out $25,997,945 in grants to other non-profits and contractors. Cullors, the only board member listed on the 63-page filing, resigned as executive director in June 2021. She did so just weeks after 2 months of victims of police violence released a statement demanding that BLMGNF stop exploiting the deaths of their children to make money. The same month as the mother's statement was published, the New York Post revealed that Cullors and her wife had purchased 4 properties worth approximately $3 million between 2016 and 2020-21.
The Australian government has partnered with Twitter, Google, Apple, Meta Facebook, TikTok, Yahoo, eBay, Linktree, Snap Inc., Change.org, GoFundMe, Product Review, and Redbubble to tell Australians what they can and can't say. Disagree with what government is saying and you'll be shut down and face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Got another message. Another message. So we have people listening. We do. There's a few of them out there. And they're not only listening, but they're listening intently and they're feedbacking, all right? So this is from Peter, a.k.a. Pavel Brovsky. in Twitterland, who also lives not too far away from me, by the way, one of the first people I ever connected with on Twitter. He lives about 2 or 3 miles down the road. But he said, "Hi, Rick, this week I'm in a place called Poroslo, I think I've spelled it right, in Hungary. Everyone I've spoke to likes Viktor Orban. Petrol/diesel is around 120 a litre, about £1 a litre versus 180 where we are. Gas and electricity is cheap. The government are subsidising to help many Hungarians." So as grim as the scenario is, especially in the UK and most of Europe, there are pockets of places out there with half-decent leaders who are doing the right thing for their people. However, they're buried and they're vilified and they're demonized and painted to be some kind of far-right wing extremist lunatics like Viktor Orban, for example. So there's a testimony. Someone's in Hungary at the minute. It's doable. It's livable. The people are happy with their leader there because he's trying to do the right thing by his people. So take heart. It is possible to get someone who at least partially looks after you rather than the shambles of a government that we have here in the UK and Ireland as well, by the way. They're utterly shambolic as well. Dan, I'm not exaggerating, my friend. If you had the time, if I had the time, and if we had the stamina, we could easy do a six-hour show today. Easy do a six-hour show today just on the events of the last week. But we don't have that time, well, maybe fortunately or maybe unfortunately, depending on how you look at it. I want to squeeze in a little bit about mortgages because, again, there's going to be a lot of people listening that have them, that are about to, that are trying to get them, that maybe want to buy a house. They're worried about rents going up. They think maybe the market will explode. They'll be priced out of the property market, etc. Facts. Let's get the facts. This week alone, hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of mortgage deals have been pulled off the market by many, many providers. Why? Because they're fixed rate deals for periods of up to 5 years or beyond. Why is that such a bad thing? They're obviously believing and anticipating a big hike in interest rates. So they don't want you, the customer, to get a good deal, because a good deal for you is a bad deal for them. Understand, banks are out for their best interests, not your best interests. So mortgages are pulled. People may be having offers withdrawn this week. Is it such a bad thing? If you were Mr. Dan Tubb hopping in through the Halifax, you've been offered a 5-year deal last week and they've said, "Sorry, Dan, it's off the table now. We can't do that for you." And they don't tell you why. Is now the time to be lamenting over a failed mortgage application?
Yeah, well, I can tell you why they're putting those offers. Is because at the beginning of August, the long-term gilt rates were around 2%, and now they're double that at 4%. So those offers were made when the mortgage company thought that they would be able to offset them with positions that were, you know, half as price as they are now. Mm-hmm. And these are the moves that you're seeing. These sort of rapid moves. And I say, you know, I say it was 2% at the beginning of August. It was, you know, a bit over 1% at the beginning of the year. So we've seen a significant acceleration in these sort of funding costs. So I can understand why these deals are being pulled, because it would cost these companies too much to honor their promises. You know, when a promise is made, it only has to go one way. It's only the little guy who has to honor their obligations, you know, not the big guys. That's obviously how it works, especially not for politicians. This is going to be a problem. And, you know, I can't give advice to people, but, you know, what I would say is it would not surprise me in the slightest if the government, again, panics and intervenes into this. So we saw that with the energy costs. All of these problems that we're facing, they're all self-inflicted wounds. You know, it's a 40-year debt bubble. It's 2 years of lockdown, which wreaked enormous damage on our economies and our supply chains. It's this drive for net zero. It's the sanctions against Russia. You know, and you know, I say sanctions on Russia. Actually, the sanctions are on ourselves. Yeah. You cannot put a legal obligation on anyone in Russia. The way sanctions work is you say to your own citizens and your own businesses, if you do business with these people, we will come after you. So actually, we're sanctioning ourselves. So all of these self-inflicted wounds, they have accumulated, you know, where we've got to this point where people are finding it unviable to live. What did this government do in response to the energy crisis? Well, they created the largest unhedged put position in all of financial history by saying we are going to backstop the energy market. You know, the cost of that, we don't know what it could be, but it could be 4% of GDP next year. These are huge numbers in this contributing world. If they did that for energy, why would they not do that for mortgages? So, you know, I just don't know what to say to people. You know, maybe the correct thing to do is rush out and lock in the absolute best deal you can now in a bit of a panic before it gets any worse. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in 2 weeks' time, it gets too much for the government and they say, right, we're gonna turn on the printing presses for this as well as energy. And that will then cause those rates to sort of tumble back down again. Mm-hmm. I think if it was me, I would probably bet on the government doing a U-turn. I don't think higher interest rates are coming. I think it's just too expensive. We can't afford it. But probably what's happening is these Western governments who built up these debts, they need to show us how painful high interest rates are. Because it means that your pension gets wiped out and your mortgage goes through the roof. So at the moment, people are calling for higher interest rates to get inflation under control. When people start to realize how damaging that is at the end of a 40-year debt cycle, people will say, oh, to hell with it. Fine. Just give me the 10 years of high inflation. Wipe this debt out. And what does that mean? It means we're all going to get squeezed. But the honest truth is we've been living it too high for the last 40 years and the day of reckoning has come. I'm sorry, but every so often the bill does come due. That's where we are.
You're starting to sound like me, mate. When you first came on here, you were so optimistic and so full of beans, and now it's like you're shrugging. And this is not a criticism, by the way. And I wish I wasn't of the mindset that I was in. But I put it like this. Let me say this: I'm a little bit more cynical, maybe, and pessimistic than you. In that, I can see our government as an abuser, someone who's financially abusive, physically abusive, and literally would not hesitate to kill us, to snuff us out. And they have the ultimate abuser mentality is when some people threaten to leave an abusive partner, they say, well, if I can't have you, I'm going to kill you. No one's going to have you. I believe there's this scorched earth element to what they're doing at the minute too, to say, okay, if we feel we're going to leave such a legacy of carnage and damage that even if they get away from us or they overturn our wicked schemes and plans, boy, are they going to have a hell of a time trying to recover from the damage that we've inflicted. That's just my own position on it. In terms of house prices themselves, the mainstream legacy media are even predicting that, and again, it's a very lowball prediction in my opinion, that by the end of next year, by the end of 2023, house prices could have fallen by 10%. I would say, you know, we haven't even had any massive unemployment filtering into our economy yet, and I'm seeing where I am businesses starting to feel more and more 10, 15, 20 people out of a job. But it's a cumulative thing, okay? When the small to medium enterprises potentially go to the wall over the next 6 to 12 months, okay, there's going to be a lot of people out of work. There's nowhere to put them if they go homeless. I can tell you that for a fact, and that will add more woe and misery, but it may not happen. So let's end on a positive note. Let's say I'm completely wrong. I've called it all wrong. That's not going to happen. And that we're going to suck it for 10 years as per your option number 3 scenario and ride out huge levels of inflation and bring ourselves back under control. Let's hope for that one. All right. I'm going to go with you on that one, and I'm going to hope that that's the case. All right.
Yeah, let me come back with a note of optimism, because, you know, actually I am optimistic for the longer term. It's the short term that I'm not optimistic for. So, you know, for my kids, actually, I think they're going to have a fantastic future. You know, there are technological developments going through at the moment that are stunning in energy technology, in farming technology, in a whole bunch of different things. And actually, I really am positive of the sort of future that they are living in. However, we are operating under a financial and political system, which was, you know, mostly designed 100 years ago. our political system was designed, you know, in the UK. Well, how far back do you want to go? But, you know, let's pick the Great Reform Act of 1860. You know, it was the reason we have politicians go off to Parliament is because back when this system was designed, you voted for your local representative and then he literally got on a horse and went to London and you didn't see him again for 4 years. You know, we no longer need the political system that we have. We certainly don't need the financial system that we have. Whether the alternatives are quite ready yet, but this system has to die. People have to understand that this system is dying. Alternatives will rise, and something will be born out of this. So, you know, for the 2030s and 2040s, it could be a golden age.
Yeah, but let's hope we get a golden child rather than Rosemary's Baby. Something is born, okay. So I like to try and keep things a little bit humorous here. Because listen, you know our mantra, if you don't laugh, you cry. Dan, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. The time goes by so fast. The developments come in thick and fast. We'll stay in touch. We'll keep calling it as it develops because it's an ongoing thing. It's not just static. It's fluid and it's fluctuating. So Dan Tubb at KingBingo_ sent me suggestions for a rebranding of Dan Tubb's name. The King Bingo thing is so 1985 or whenever it was he joined Twitter. We need to get him up to speed. Dan, thank you very much, sir. Have a wonderful day. I'm going to be talking to Greg Mabry after the news, I hope, in Western Australia. So keep it here. Keep it locked. Keep it loaded on TNT Radio.